Welcome to Next Talk, powered by Compass Group. We're discussing how today's climate will impact the future of on-site food service. Bringing together the most innovative thought leaders, this series will explore how we adapt to the new normal, contribute to a successful outcome, and help lead the industry for the long term. Joining us today on Next Talk is Belinda Oakley, CEO of Chartwell's K-12, a division of Compass Group where they focus on serving up happy and healthy to more than 4,100 schools across the country. They're ranging from large public institutions to small charter schools. And joining us is Jeremy Everett, the founder and executive director of the Baylor Collaborative on Hunger and Poverty at Baylor University. Thank you both so much for joining us for such a meaningful topic about feeding our children. 98% of schools across the country abruptly closed in March. And Belinda, your teams immediately transformed cafeterias into emergency feeding sites within hours. Tell us why it was so important for Chartwell's K-12 to transition so quickly.
Yeah, I think everyone has kind of their own memory of school lunch and cafeterias and what that was for them growing up. But I do think not everyone has an appreciation for the importance of school meals and the school lunch program for so many students and families across the country. About 22 million kids today depend on those federally funded nutrition programs, which is about 50% of school-aged children. For us, I guess, we happen to be sitting in the midst of a hyper-aware situation where we see these kids every day, and we also know a fair amount about the research that's been done in terms of what happens during the summer. So when schools naturally close, the statistics are pretty overwhelming. About 6 out of 7 food insecure children don't get adequate nutrition during the summer. So when the pandemic hit, I think it was a very instinctive reflex, I guess, to do whatever it took at the time to bridge that gap. We have about 16,000 extremely talented lunch ladies and lunch dudes all across the country whose mission is really to feed those kids and to support their communities, because these are, in many cases, these are their children or their children's children. It's their neighbor's son or daughter that they shepherd through the cafeteria every day. And we heard from so many of them when schools closed, who's going to feed the babies? That was literally what the quotes out of the lives of our people was, knowing that if we don't feed them, they're probably going to go hungry. So as you mentioned, you know, it's probably in many cases 24 hours to 36 hours, we had a plan for every single one of our schools and every single one of our 660 districts around the country to provide meals, whether that was through drive-through grab-and-go pickup sites for parents or partnering with our school administrations and their transportation teams to take over the bus routes. We actually delivered, in many cases, we would, you know, do the reverse bus route and we would deliver to families every day who'd meet us at the bus stop their meals. We recently hit the milestone of 100 million meals served to children during the pandemic. And that's just kind of who Chartwell's K-12 is, and it's just what we do.
The response rate, I mean, 24 to 36 hours is truly incredible. And now 100 million meals. Jeremy, the Baylor Collaborative on Hunger and Poverty really shares a mission with Chartwell's, and that's to make sure that the kids and families don't have to worry about their next meal. Can you tell us about your efforts and the Meals to You program, which I understand started before the pandemic?
Our job as an organization is really, since we're a university-based project, is really to identify what are the solutions out there that we need to address hunger and poverty, whether that's in the United States or around the world. And so what do those solutions look like, and what of those solutions are scalable? So typically, our organization is testing out anywhere from a dozen to 15 different interventions at a time. Last summer, we partnered with USDA to look at how we could address summer hunger for children in rural America. I had a privilege of serving on a congressional commission called the National Commission on Hunger, and one of the things that we identified in our travels around the country, listening to people that were food insecure and meeting with organizations that were addressing the issue, is that that many of our urban responses to addressing food insecurity in the U.S. weren't translating to our rural communities. Specifically, when you think about child hunger during the summer, we're dependent upon that summer meal program that USDA provides. But many of our kids in rural America live too far to be able to travel to a summer meal site. So we began to ask the question, if we couldn't get the children to the meals, how do we get the meals to the kids? And that became the impetus for our Meals to You program. Now, we're a university. We're not a food service company. We don't have great minds like Belinda's in terms of logistics and the capabilities of as she said, the lunch ladies and the lunch dudes all across the country working to provide food to children on a daily basis. And so we are completely dependent on building public and private partnerships for our responses to see if these solutions are scalable. So last summer, we launched a small summer pilot in East and West Texas with 20 school districts and about 4,000 kids. It worked great. We had about 485,000 meals and snacks that went to kids that would not have otherwise received a USDA summer meal. So we were planning, and USDA came back to us immediately, said that they loved the program and asked us to expand it to New Mexico and Alaska this next summer. But when the pandemic hit, they called us and they said, is there any way that you can scale this nationwide immediately? Because we know that kids in rural America are not going to have access to meals once their schools are closed. And obviously many of us thought it was very realistic that they may not reopen. So knowing that there were going to be a whole lot of issues, but we knew that we needed more expertise at the table. And that's when we began to have conversations with Belinda and her team to see if they would be willing to come alongside us to help us meet that need that USDA had identified and articulated.
Well, Belinda, can you tell us a little about that and how this partnership to feed the children in the communities did come together?
It began somewhat unintentionally, certainly, I would say, from Chartwell's K-12 side. I'd actually been at home. I distinctly remember watching the White House address where they announced the program. Secretary of Ag, Sonny Perdue, announced that they were going to be partnering with the Baylor Collaborative and with the support of USDA funding, McLean Global and PepsiCo Foundation, which is their humanitarian arm, really trying to solve for a child hunger called Food for Good. And they were going to find a way to ship meals to kids in rural America. And I still remember watching this and thinking, my goodness, we serve 2 million meals a day in cafeterias. And I was trying to wrap my brain around how are they going to do this? What are they doing? And PepsiCo happens to be a major vendor partner for us and for the entire Compass Group family. And originally I reached out to them just through our account contacts, in all transparency, to say, do you need some help? Because we were at the time, I mean, and still are, the largest team of chefs and dietitians in the child nutrition industry, but all we do is school food. And I feel like we are incredibly experienced, incredibly well equipped. And the concept of what was about to be tackled kind of broke my brain. I was thinking about, you know, some of the supply chain challenges we were dealing with as we were serving emergency meals. At that point, we had gone from 4,100 schools around the country to just over 2,000 emergency feeding sites, and we were feeding about 1 million meals a day. When I reached out to the Food for Good team at PepsiCo, it was really just to say, do you need our dietitians? Do you need some help with supply chain? Milk, for example, was a really challenging piece of the puzzle, and particularly shelf-stable milk. At the close of maybe two or three conversations, Matt Smith from the PepsiCo team actually said, listen, I really think you should speak with Jeremy Everett from the Baylor Collaborative, who's actually orchestrated this program with his team. It just sort of felt like quite a natural conclusion that we formally joined the partnership. And it's absolutely been, I would say, our team's most proud moment through this pandemic. And I think it also provided an incredible opportunity that was just, a side benefit for us to be able to do this. We needed, we know school meals, we know child nutrition. What we don't know is shipping shelf-stable meals, but Canteen, our vending sector of Compass Group, of course, they know commissaries, they know shipping, they ship shelf-stable things. And so we immediately reached out to them to say, how could we do this together? And we combined that expertise, and between the two Compass organizations, we're currently feeding about 50,000 students who can't get access to meals right now. But the other byproduct is it's helped us and the Canteen team employ a lot of people who, just by nature of this pandemic, wouldn't have necessarily had the opportunities.
And Jeremy, I'm sure that you can really relate to a lot of the impact and the feedback you've been receiving.
One of the things that we've heard from families is just a sigh of relief with, so, unfortunately, so many families who have lost jobs or been furloughed from their jobs. They've reached out and they've just said, thank you. You know, we have a lot of stress right now in our household, and it's nice to know that at the very least that our kids have access to meals throughout the week. And then that's one less thing that we have to worry about. And so for us to be able to step in that way, to be able to walk alongside families in the U.S. who are dealing with all kinds of trauma, but it has been a real gift for us to be able to do this. Your company has been able to do that while also maintaining curbside meal programs across the country, and that you are able to keep people employed. That is one of the most understated things about a lot of these childhood nutrition programs is the level of employment that we're able to provide families across the country. So not only are you ensuring, you know, that in partnership with us, that 300,000 kids are getting meals on a daily basis in America's most difficult to reach areas, you're ensuring that thousands of people have jobs that otherwise would not have been able to be employed through this period.
You know, the silver lining in this pandemic is that it has shone a light on how important federally funded school lunch programs are for the whole year. Because I think it has made people much more aware of just how many children in America are food insecure and how many families depend on these programs. And now more than ever, I mean, anytime I get a chance for a PSA for anybody who has been disrupted in their employment, I take it. And these federally funded programs for child nutrition, they're available to anyone under any change of circumstance at any point in the year. So, you know, for anybody listening to the podcast who's had disruption to their income levels, you know, these are programs that are there for a reason. They're confidential to enroll in. You can do it at any point. All you have to have is a change of status. And they're here for a very important reason, to make sure that, you know, again, for families who are already struggling with so much, this is one piece that they don't have to worry about. And I do believe that this has really raised a great deal of awareness of how important this is, and that programs like what Jeremy and the Baylor Collaborative had started a year ago, they're going to continue, and we're going to find ways to reach more kids all year round going forward.
This is all part of a greater journey. And, you know, it's so fascinating to think back that our nation's school lunch program, it started during World War II. And now here we are today responding with innovation in another time of crisis. So I think it'll be great let's look ahead. So Jeremy, let's start with you. What does this approach look like moving forward beyond today's challenges?
Many of the regulatory requirements that have evolved over the past 50, 60, 70 years are antiquated. And we live in a very different environment than the one that we did before. And even some of the reasons for why we created these programs in the beginning, you know, have certainly changed. What have we learned? To Belinda's point about the silver linings, I think we learned, honestly, this scaling this program up to 43 states and territories from a 20 district, you know, East and West Texas pilot a summer ago. We've probably learned about 5 years worth of information, if not more. through this particular intervention. And so I think it's certainly helped paint the picture of the fact that addressing rural hunger in America seems to be bipartisan. We've had a lot of positive feedback from Republicans and Democrats in Congress and with the administration. And so I think it's thinking about, okay, well, how do we take a program like this and institute it in such a way so that next summer we're not reverting back to just serving kids in two or three states, but that we build upon the momentum that we've collectively been able to see through this pandemic. We've learned a lot, and your team has done everything they can to ensure that it's a high quality meal that each child is getting. And I think we can really build upon that. I am continually amazed at the high quality of service and food that you and the PepsiCo Food for Good team and the McLean Global team have been able to assemble for our kids. It really is tremendous, and we're very grateful for it.
Yeah, I think the only thing I'll add to that with Jeremy, it sounds like a perfect time for me to give a shout out to FoodBuy, our procurement arm, which I would say, how have we achieved it? Well, I can tell you what I've been doing every day for the duration of our partnership is every morning, first half an hour of the day, we have a team, about a dozen of us, that meet, which is cross-functional. It's the canteen team, it's some of the FoodBuy team, it's our chefs and a couple of our dietitians, because it is amazing. I mean, I think the thing with, as Jeremy said, you'd think shelf-stable meals kind of limits your options, but we just don't accept that as an outcome. It, you know, for us, we've always seen school lunch as that one 30 minutes of unprogrammed time in a child's day. You know, from the second they wake up in the morning to the second they come home, their day is determined for them. And we see our job as being that relief, that opportunity to kind of express yourself, to be a bit more independent, to have a choice, to have a say. And so when we think about what we aim to leave them with after 30 minutes in the cafeteria, we absolutely want them leaving healthier. That's just a foundational mission, but we want them leaving happier. And to do that, you have to have food that's not just good for you, but food that you're also excited to eat and you're excited to try new things. And so it was a very new challenge to look at the range that is available in shelf-stable products that meet what we need to provide nutritionally, meet what we can actually procure with some stability, and hence the daily phone calls, because the stability right now is extremely difficult to manage through. And so there was absolutely a lot of pivoting. And every time you pivot on an item in the child nutrition programs that are federally funded, you have to always make sure that they check the boxes on the nutritional requirements and of the meal pattern that is set forth to be eligible for a reimbursable meal. So it's actually quite complex anytime you have a substitution. But I can tell you, we probably spent, I'd say, 3 weeks before we even started the program doing nothing but trying to work on a menu that, yes, number one, is it stable, shelf stable? Number two, is it a supply chain that we think we can get with some level of continuity? But number three, would I be excited if I got that box? And Grace Norman on Jeremy's team and I were laughing a couple of weeks ago, because we do send kind of a quality control box to the Baylor team regularly, just to sort of make sure that, again, we're sort of checking ourselves and making sure that what we're sending is what we'd all want to receive for our kids. And obviously, it sounds like the Go-Go Squeezers are highly popular in the Baylor team's office, because there are, again, we were very careful about making sure that not the food wasn't just good for you, but it was fun and there was a great deal of variety. And it encouraged kids to try new things, because I think the last thing that I would add on in terms of what is next is the cafeteria in the last decade has changed greatly. If anybody thinks it's an institutional line with tater tots like it was when you were in school, come with me, come see a Chartwell's K-12 cafeteria. I mean, the students today, this generation, is demanding a very different experience. And I think this pandemic and getting meals to kids wherever they are has only kind of inspired us all to keep thinking that way and to find new ways to engage and impress them, because their expectations aren't changing. And in fact, you know, where they're going to be eating in the future, especially by nature of the social distancing that's going to be required when they return to school, we're going to have to be even more creative at finding ways to get food to them and making sure that when that food gets to them, whether it's being delivered in a classroom, whether it's being put in a meal kit for them to take home on the bus if they're doing an AM or a PM cohort in their school district, that when they get that food, it's something that they're excited to eat and it leaves them happier and healthier. And that's just going to continue to challenge us all to be creative and to really partner with talented chefs and dietitians and supply chain professionals to find solutions to keep making school lunch one of the best parts of a kid's day.
Well, I think certainly everyone listening has a greater understanding and appreciation of why Chartwell's is known for serving up happy and healthy. And this partnership with Baylor and hitting the milestone of serving more than 100 million meals just during this pandemic alone, it's truly, truly an inspiration. So thank you to you both and to all the lunch ladies, lunch dudes, bus drivers, everyone for making it happen, because it's just incredible. Before we let you go, we do want to have a quick speed round. So we like to ask all of our guests three quick questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit better. So ladies first, Belinda, you are up first. What are you most excited about doing once social distancing is over?
Travel is definitely up there, but I think I'm probably going to have to say I'm most excited about what it means for my daughter. I have a three-year-old and she's a total love bug and she's a hugger like I am. And it's challenging. It's challenging explaining why we can't see her friends or why we need to wear a mask at the playground. And I think, you know, kids are just so resilient, but at the same time, I'm most excited to see my three-year-old daughter, you know, live her life with the normalcy that, you know, a lot of us probably took for granted, including myself, 5 months ago. So I'm probably most excited to see that moment and kind of and just be able to enjoy that.
And what's something that you've started during stay at home that you would like to keep going?
I can think of 100 things I've started that I would like to stop, including overeating and sitting too much and all sorts of things. But I think probably the most boring thing, but the thing that has changed for me, is going to bed earlier. I'm a big believer in kind of the science and behind the need for good sleep, but it usually doesn't win against the next episode in a Netflix series. But there's something about this pandemic that I think has certainly left me and I think most people quite exhausted, and going to bed earlier just seems to be hand in hand with this dynamic right now.
And when you are staying up, do you have a top choice between a puzzle, a podcast, a board game, a movie, or a good book?
I do think this is completely pandemic related. I had always listened to books, probably because I'm on planes a lot, you travel a lot, and you know, I would always be listening to Audible and audiobooks, but there's something about this that has made me crave paperbacks, but books, actual physical books. And again, that's something I really hope continues beyond the stay at home, because there's something about the art of paper that it's more pleasurable, and maybe that's why I'm going to bed earlier, because I've got books to read. So these two things might belong together post-pandemic.
Terrific. All right, and Jeremy, now it's your turn. What are you most excited about doing once social distancing is over?
Well, one of the things I'm going to regret is are putting dress pants on again. You know, I can admittedly say that I have not missed dress pants at all. But, you know, I think my kids going back to school, and probably like Belinda, am on the road a lot when life is normal. And so I have absolutely loved being at home with my family during this period. But I know my kids are, my boys are 16, 14, and 5, and they are anxious to spend time with friends and get back to school and play sports and do their clubs and whatnot that they've been involved with. And so I think I'm pretty excited about the prospect of them being able to do that again once this social distancing period's over.
I hear you on that. And is there something that you started doing during stay at home that you would like to keep going?
Well, you know, I've always I've loved fly fishing probably for the past 20 years or whatnot, but I have become an addict of a fly fishing addict. And so if it's a break between meetings or in the evenings or even getting up early before meetings start, I've got a river that's pretty close to my house, and my oldest son loves to fish as well. And we have just been, I think we've caught all the fish in the Middle Bosque in Central Texas that are there, and I want to keep doing it. So I hope we're able to keep that going. Even once life gets hurried and crazy again.
Well, and you may have already answered the last question, but do you have a top choice between a puzzle, podcast, board game, movie, or a book outside of fishing?
Yeah, we in the evenings, I'm a morning reader, but in the evenings, my wife and I love to sit down and watch a Netflix series or a show. Our older boys are getting into Friends episodes, and so we've been rewatching Friends lately in the evenings with our older boys, and that's been fun.
Oh, that is a lot of fun, and thank you both just so much for your time and for everything that you're doing, and we really do look forward to navigating what's next together.
Want to keep this conversation going? Join us at compassgroup.podbean.com to listen to a new episode every week. If you have questions or a request, send them to envisiongroup@compass-usa.com. Until then, be safe and be well.